The king sighs heavily, then raises his hand, silencing us.
Let me speak, or it's going to go badly for you.
Chastised, I duck my head. Can't piss off the king, or we're just going to make things worse.
I've been told that while Aspeth was the mastermind, she could not possibly work on her own. Seeing you now, I agree.
Ouch.
Therefore, I find the 5 of Magpie's students guilty of attempted theft and breaking guild law. Guild law states that you should be expelled from the guild entirely.
My heart sinks. I've doomed the others.
I've also been told that in the crypt you found, multiple greater artifacts have been discovered. And that the discovery of a greater artifact automatically gives a student full membership into the guild.
I ache all over again, because I have mixed emotions. Part of me is devastated that the crypt has been robbed of its treasures, but at the same time, I'm grateful that something was found to help our cause. I'm just as bad as any other tomb robber. Does this mean that we're safe?
I can't let the two cancel each other out.
The king continues.
Because then you would be left with no punishment at all. So my punishment is thus. You will be rejected from this year's schooling. You will be repeaters, or you can leave. Should you wish to stay and repeat your lessons, you will work for the guild in whatever capacity any rejected students provide work to the guild, and then you will be allowed to enroll again next year. I don't approve of your actions, but your teacher was Magpie. A corrupted pool poisons all that drink from it. Next year, when you rejoin the guild as students again, keep this in mind and stay out of trouble, hmm?
I'm crushed to hear his answer. No more school for us. We're to work for the guild and try again next year. I've caused the others so much trouble, and again, it was all for nothing.
Lady Aspeth Honore, I would speak to you in private.
The king says. He gets to his feet and flicks his hand again.
The rest of you are dismissed.
Uneasy, I look at the others. Meriden has tears in her eyes, and Gwenna is stoic. Lark looks as if she wants to punch something, and Kip licks his eyeball over and over again, a nervous tick. I squeeze Gwenna's hand and let it go, then turn to the others. We'll meet up after this and talk. I'm so sorry.
There's nothing to be sorry over, Locke tells me.
We knew what we were getting into, is all Gwenna says. Now go mind the king. She's got her fear of nobility and their reprisals, I remember. I nod and follow after the king. His guards moving to flank me. I don't know what he has to say in private, but I'm sure it's nothing that's going to make me happy. If he was exonerating me, he'd do so in front of everyone. And there's no reason to exonerate me, truly. I am guilty. 48. Aspeth. The guards lead me down the hall to a room with a large rounded door. A guard stands outside, and when I go in, there are 2 more of the king's honor guard there, crowded in behind a heavy ornate wood desk. On one wall, there's a shelf full of artifacts, and on another, rows of old books. Behind the desk is a large painted portrait of Rooster in all his guild regalia, and I suspect this is his office. I don't know if it's ironic or amusing that he's got a huge portrait of himself in his office, but it fits what I know of him.
Shut the door behind us.
The king tells his guards, walking a few steps ahead of me. He pauses behind the desk, pulling off his gloves, and then thumps into the seat. I carefully stand across from him, until he waves in my direction, indicating I should sit too. Once I've perched on a chair, he eyes me.
Explain to me the reasoning as to why a sheltered holder's daughter would go to Vas Warren by herself and join the Royal Artifactual Guild. I'm trying to piece it together in my head, and it seems a ridiculous choice.
He indicates I should speak.
So, make me understand.
My father has gambled away our ancestral artifacts. I say uneasy. I hate telling that to someone in power like the king, but I'm also aware he could try to confiscate my father's holding at any time regardless. We're exposed and helpless, without any sort of magic to aid us in protection of our people. Our hold is also penniless. There are no funds to replace anything. So I thought I would join the guild and get replacement artifacts for my father.
By stealing them?
No, I was going to do it the right way, the honorable way, have it taken out of my guild tithe, no matter how many years it takes, repair our defenses quietly. But Lord Barnabas arrived and started paying for guild teams to hunt artifacts so he could go to war. And I knew where he was planning to attack. I had to do something. He nods thoughtfully, leaning back.
It seems to me that you could have prevented all of this by marrying someone, Lady Asquith. Like, say, Lord Barnabas. I'm told there was a broken engagement.
I nod. He said unpleasant things about me to someone, and I overheard it. He was marrying me for my position.
Then it seems to me that the best revenge would have been to marry him.
The king gives me a polite smile.
Let him pay for artifacts for his new home.
I didn't trust him to do so, I say bluntly. Fury builds inside me, but how can I expect the king to understand? He's a man born to privilege. Of course he'd suggest that I marry Barnabas. I expected to find myself having an accident once he determined there were no artifacts in the Honori treasury. Then he would have both the hold and a rich new bride, and my father and I would be dead.
An extreme scenario. You think he would plan such a thing?
I believe it to be true. The king taps his fingertips together.
As much as I hate to admit it, Lady Asquith, your suspicions match mine. I've been watching the Chatworth family for some time, and nothing he's done this day surprises me. He's a holder's son, though, so you understand why I cannot punish him more harshly than I have. Just as I cannot punish you properly. You both deserve to go to prison, and yet here I am with my hands tied.
I say nothing, my hands clasped politely in my lap. Something about the king's choice of words and his too affable expression tell me that he's very angry about the entire scenario.
I'm tempted to just marry you to Barnabas, as was the original plan, and send you home. But I would also hate to be responsible for your untimely death, should it happen.
And I am already married, I say lightly, trying to smile.
Yes, to a Taurian. Tell me, was that willingly?
I nod. It was my suggestion. I'm quite happy in the union.
And do you expect this guild Taurian to run your father's hold as his heir?
When I shake my head mutely, he arches a brow.
But marrying him is considered a disgrace, and now, as far as you know, your father has no suitable heir. What were you thinking?
I was thinking that I would like to stay alive, Your Majesty. I took the problems one at a time. I still haven't solved that one yet. He huffs a laugh.
Nor have I. I am going to have to think on it for some time today.
The king sets his hand on the table and drums it, his many rings winking. I recognize at least two of them as Prelian.
Which brings me to the current issue of the artifact you stole. The two joined rings. The Mistwall artifacts. You recall them?
I hold my breath, trying to remain neutral. Yes, Your Majesty?
As stolen greater artifacts, they have been returned to the guild and thus sold to a holder.
I see. I should have expected it.
I did expect it. Even so, hearing such a thing breaks something inside me. All of that work for nothing. All of the danger, the betrayals, the cave-in, the rattlings, the crypt. It was all for nothing. Tears slide down my face, even though I do my best to keep my composure. I clench my hands tightly in my lap to keep from outright sobbing in the king's face. But the silent tears escape, no matter how hard I try.
You understand, you left me no choice. I couldn't very well just hand them over to you after you stole them.
The look he gives me is admonishing. Of course not. Defeat crushes me. There's no hope left. Honori Hold is lost.
The guild wished to press charges, but I have managed to soothe them. I've handled the artifacts in question, and I have removed your name from their rolls. You have been removed from the guild, with no option to re-enroll.
Removed from the guild? Permanently. Is it considered a knife to the heart if your heart is already stomped into the floor? I understand, Your Majesty.
I don't know that you do.
He snaps.
You cannot imagine the sheer number of meetings I've had. To soothe ruffled feathers over this and prevent war. You had better appreciate what I've done for you.
I do, I say dully. Thank you, Your Majesty. No guild. Ever. A small part of me thinks I was never cut out for it. That I'd rather sit by a cozy fire with a book and read about old Prel than cave-dive into the ruins. But now I can't help my father acquire more artifacts. I can't help Honori Hold. And once word gets out that our home is defenseless, other families will come sniffing around, trying to accomplish what Barnabas did not. There's a knock at the door.
Good.
The king says, a hint of a smile on his face.
The Lord Holder is here to pick up the artifact rings I've sold to him.
Is this part of my punishment? I wonder, as the guard goes to the door, that I have to watch the handoff of all my hopes and dreams. The door opens, and a bearded nobleman steps in, dressed in fur-trimmed robes and wearing a feathered cap. My father? 49. Aspeth.
The king's plan is brilliant,
my father says over dinner.
You're lucky he stepped in to fix things after you botched them, Aspeth, darling. What a ridiculous plan you had.
I poke at my stew. After the king dismissed us and sold my father the artifacts I worked so hard to retrieve, we've regrouped for an evening meal. Or rather, we're supposed to be eating, but I don't have much of an appetite. I can't get over that my father's here. I can't get over that the king was toying with me when he'd already made plans with father. He just wanted to see my responses. It sits sourly in my belly, just like the oniony stew. My father didn't want to stay on guild property as he feels they spy on holders. So I find myself at the King's Onion again. The same barmaid is slinging drinks, a sympathetic look on her face when I arrive with my dour, unpleasant father. Father sniffs in distaste at the look of the place, but his attitude changes once I tell him that they have an artifact from the king himself. Artifacts always impress everyone. The stew tastes heavily of onions and meat, and it smells delicious. My stomach, however, is far too tense for me to take more than a bite. Father has no such issues. He has a bowl of stew in front of him, his second one, and he sips froth from his beer, his manners impeccable despite the sheer amount of food he can put away. Hawk eats just as much as my father, I realize, but Hawk eats nothing save vegetables and grains. My father, however, just likes to eat. and drink, and gamble. He spoons a chunk of meat and shakes his head at me.
Well?
I glance up, feeling like a chastised child. I'm sorry?
What were you thinking, daughter?
Yes. I was thinking that someone had to do something to save Honori Hold, but of course I can't say that to my father. He'll reach across this table and slap my mouth, and no one will stop him because he's a holder. I toy with a chunk of carrot in my stew idly. I thought I could help.
It's lucky for you that we have Liotta to thank.
He grumbles, glancing up.
Ah, here she comes now.
The fair Liotta. I've never been in the same room as her, because mistresses and daughters don't mix. We're kept in very careful circles, and I'm supposed to pretend like I don't know that my father has a mistress at court. That Liotta is so beautiful, she slept with the king himself, and that she's been my father's paramour for a long while. I've never met her, but the woman who glides through the crowd of tables fits my expectations. She's beautiful, of course, well-dressed, and from the look in her eyes, sharp. I suppose you need to be all those things to survive at court, and Liotta thrives there. Her brocade dress is sumptuous, her neckline deep enough to show the swells of her breasts just above her tightly cinched corset, and she wears a fashionable little ruff around her neck in lieu of jewelry. Her hair's pulled into multiple knots atop her head, each one covered in a ruby-studded golden net. Her dark eyes are crafty as she flicks her bracelet-encrusted arm, indicating her servant should pull out her seat. The woman attending her does so, brushing off the wooden chair with a napkin and then wiping the table before Liotta sits down gracefully. She has to be at least 10 years older than me, but you wouldn't know it just from looking at her. Liotta makes me feel old and frumpy, with my dirty hair and a freshly cleaned but extremely plain dress that Gwenna brought when she'd heard I was going to be released. Lady Aspeth, Liotta says in a rich, careful voice. It's lovely to finally meet you. Is it? Because it feels awkward to me. I smile, but I genuinely don't know what to do. Society says that I should ignore her because she's a courtesan. But then again, society also says I shouldn't marry a Taurian. My father tells me I should thank you, I blurt, parroting his words. That seems safe. Have you spoken to the king on my behalf? Liotta chuckles. Not quite. She nudges her servant, and the woman trots off to get her food and drink. A great deal has been happening while you have been awaiting your trial. I'm puzzled, and I glance to my father.
Your new husband, the Taurian.
Father pauses and gives me another disapproving look, as if he can't let a moment pass without reminding me that he's not happy about Hawk.
He sent a crow with a letter. Said you were in Vast Warren and needed the protection of the family name.
My eyebrows go up. He said that? Liotta shakes her head. His missive was incoherent, actually. It was full of rambling about marriage and the guild and danger and magpies. Ah, he must have been totally lost in the conquest moon's thrall, and yet he still knew to contact my father, so Lord Honori could throw his weight around. And after you received that, you contacted the king? They exchange a look. We happened to be at court already, and I suggested to your father that we needed to re-establish business with the guild anyhow. So it wasn't about me. Yet something about all of this isn't making sense. But there's no money. Liotta clears her throat. Father just takes another bite of bread and chews,
stubbornly avoiding eye contact with me. I blink at the two of them, wondering what it is I'm missing. The queen is pregnant with her second child, Lyotta says delicately after a long pause. They are hoping this one is a son. I wait for a further explanation, because I'm still not following. I take a bite of stew. My father finally speaks up, seeing my confusion.
Lyotta needs to leave court, so I married her.
I choke on the stew, spewing it into my napkin. You what? It's commonly accepted that a nobleman will have relations with a courtesan, but marrying one is about as likely as, well, a noble marrying a Taurian. Still, my father has always been such a stickler for propriety. He's been seeing Lyotta for a decade now and has never mentioned marrying her.
I married her,
father retorts angrily.
You're one to talk.
I'm not talking, I cough. I'm just surprised. The queen doesn't wish to see me at court any longer. Lyotta gives me a polite smile as I drink some water to soothe my throat. The king and I had a liaison once, and she feels threatened. I understand that it's in my best interests to retire to the countryside, so the king offered me a dowry. I nod, sipping more water. The queen must really want beautiful Lyotta gone if he's throwing money at her to make it happen. My father speaks again.
So I married her and had our son legitimized.
I spew water this time. You have a son? Lyotta's expression is carefully blank, but my father's is defensive.
Yes, we do. His name is Geroth, and the king is his godfather.
Oh, is all I managed to choke out. He's 7, Lyotta says. Oh. My father has had another child for 7 years, and no one told me? Everyone at court must have known. The king must have known, which means he was truly just testing me.
Geroth is the heir now that he's legitimate,
father says, and focuses a scowl upon me.
Which is a good thing, because your behavior has been shameless. What were you thinking, Aspeth?
Again with the, what were you thinking? I drink more water, trying to keep it down this time, and I Lyotta. Her expression is careful, and she doesn't touch the stew or wine that her maid sets down in front of her. She's watching me, waiting to see how I'm going to take the news that I've been deposed from my position as heir. I suppose I should be angry, furious, hurt. I'm relieved, so damn relieved, I want to laugh aloud. Lyotta has schemed at court for years, and now she's neatly tangled my father. She will be Lady Honori, and her son will be Honori's heir. He can't be any worse than my father is, so I don't have a problem with it. I can stay in Vastwarren, or I can leave. My future is finally mine. I see, I say carefully. My congratulations to young Geroth, but I must recommend again, father, that you acquire more artifacts. I know you said the king sold you my rings.
The rings you stole, you mean?
Father corrects with a stern glare.
Such a bad look, Aspeth. I taught you better than that.
But one set of rings is not going to protect the entire hold, I continue, ignoring him. More has to be done. The knights have to be paid. The guild has no Honori team. Crops. Lyotta holds up a beringed hand. I understand your concerns, she says, stopping me. It is a conversation I had with your father prior to our marriage. I am not handing over my fortune simply for him to toss it away. I am in charge now. Her expression hardens ever so slightly. I will control Honori's funds, and I've established a team with the guild so we can repair our defenses. It will be expensive, but necessary. Father frowns at his new wife.
I really don't think.
She turns to him and freezes him with a look. I'm in charge of the finances, Corin. Her voice is firm but sweet. You'll recall we've discussed this extensively. You'll have an allowance. I smother the laughter that threatens to rise from me. I suspect Honori Hold is in excellent hands. Lyata has maneuvered her way about court for so long that she's going to know just how to handle my father. She's not going to let him bankrupt the Hold and then leave her son with a mess. She's going to rule with an iron fist. She's going to put my father on an allowance. I almost want to be there to see it. Almost.
50. Hawk. My wife has been gone for too long. I know it's just for dinner with her father, so she can explain her motives. I've met the man, and a more pompous and careless fool I've never seen. He's like every Holder Lord I've met, concerned with his own comforts over the needs of his people. His court lady should keep him in check, though. I've met her type before, and she hasn't worked this hard to let him piss away everything she's gained. I'm not worried they'll insist Aspeth return to Honori Hold. The new wife won't want Aspeth around to object to how she runs things. Mostly, I just want to grab Aspeth and hold her tight against my chest. It's been a long, eventful day. A long, eventful month, actually. And we haven't had a chance to have a conversation since we left the crypt. I've been embroiled in guild bullshit all day and all night, working with Rooster to move Magpie's master ranking over to me, establishing my guild contracts, ensuring that Magpie will have a stipend of some kind, no matter what happens, fighting for her students to be given another chance, and then, because I'm Taurian, pushing for others of my kind to be given more weight with the guild. Osprey, Raptor, and so many others work too hard to get overlooked permanently. I haven't gotten as far as I want, but with me as a guildmaster, I'm hoping that it will pave the way for others. That's for the future, though. For the present, I want to know what Aspeth's plans are. I want to know what's going to happen between us. I want to know what the king said. I hate having to wait to even talk to my wife. That the guards outside the inn have made it very clear I'm not allowed in to see her until she leaves her father's table. So I stand outside in my full guildmaster regalia, and I wait, arms crossed. I can be just as bullheaded as any noble. I'm making it clear to them that I'm not leaving without my wife. Bad enough that she's been sent off with her father without anyone letting me know. I've already filled Rooster's ears on what I think of that. "They're holders," he'd explained as if that answered everything. "They don't answer to me." I don't care if he's right. I'm still pissed about it. So I wait. And when one of the guards sends a message inside, I half expect to be escorted from the premises despite all my trappings. Instead, they open the door to the inn and let me through. My wife is on her feet, and she dutifully kisses the cheek of her father. An elder balding man with a thick gut and ridiculous pointy shoes that mean he cares more for fashion than for common sense. He gives me a dismissive look, which I ignore, and then heads out with a pretty woman on his arm. Aspeth remains a few steps behind, her gaze on me. "Wife," I say when she gets close enough, a wealth of meaning in my tone. She doesn't seem to notice my choice of words. Her hands smooth down her plain dress and she leans toward me, her voice low.
"You should have joined us for dinner. Perhaps then he wouldn't have lectured me as if I were a foolish child."
I want to tell her that I tried to join them for dinner, but it's just as well. People have been lecturing me for days now on taking advantage of a noble woman. of my shameful morals in daring to marry a Holder's daughter while being Taurian. I can miss out on hearing it again from her father. I'm here now. Aspeth squints up at me and then touches the bright red sash across my coat, studded with golden pins.
And you look very fine, too. Red suits you.
You approve, then. I offer her my arm. She takes it, gazing up at me as we exit the inn.
Why wouldn't I approve? If anyone deserves it, it's you. I've seen how much you do for the guild.
Things are different now, though. She's seen it through the eyes of a student, a hopeful who dreams of joining the guild. Someone who put everything on the line to join and has now been banned from it entirely. I know Rooster's decision, and I hate it, but the king supported it. I know Aspeth must be crushed inside. She had her reasons for joining, to save her father's hold. But I also know that she's dreamed of and studied the ruins of Old Prell so extensively that it's been more than just a recent plan. No one loves Old Prell half as much as Aspeth Honori. And now it's been taken from her. And it makes me feel helpless, because I don't know what to do about it. If you need brute force, I'm the one. If you need an expert on the maze of tunnels beneath Vast Warren, I'm the bull you need. Taurians have a keen sense of smell and an innate ability to always know where we are going. That's why we're perfect in the Everbelow. I can handle that, just like I can handle teaching students how to become part of the guild. What I can't handle is the thought of my wife's crushing disappointment. I don't know what to say that will make it better. So I'm silent as we walk through the sloping, cobbled streets of Vast Warren. It's dark, with flickering lamps lighting the streets. Someone's horse snorts nearby, and I neatly move Aspeth out of the way of a particularly muddy patch on the street. But other than that, we walk in silence.
My father has a new heir,
Aspeth finally says, her fingers playing on my sleeve as we walk. Ah, Dark God's Five Hills, what am I supposed to say to that? Not only has she lost the guild, but she's lost her inheritance? This is just getting worse with every step.
I'm sorry it's not us. I hate to disappoint you.
She's thinking about me? I turn to look down at her, surprised. I haven't given it a single thought, Aspeth. Now she's the one who looks surprised.
No. Most people marry a holder's daughter because they want power. They dream of what they can do with the hold in their control.
I didn't know you were a holder's daughter when I married you, remember? All I was thinking about was how uncomfortable the upcoming Conquest Moon was going to be if I didn't have a partner. And if I recall correctly, you propositioned me. I shake my head. It's never been about your hold. When she simply nods, her expression distant, I try to change the subject. Besides, I'll be busy here.
Because you're a guild master.
She reaches out and touches my chest, and the sash proudly displayed across it. It's not something I'd normally wear around the city, because I hate pretentiousness. But Aspeth seems to like the sight of it on me. If she touches my chest one more time, I'm tempted to find the nearest alley and fling her up against a wall with her skirts over her head. Hells, I'm tempted to do that anyhow.
Are you happy?
She asks me, her voice soft. I consider this. Am I? It's something I both wanted and assumed I would never have. I am. It gives me more of a voice. It lets me pave the way for other Taurians. It lets me train fledglings the way I think they should be trained. And I'll make coin if they graduate. So I'm happy. I flex my hand, the magicked one. And I got Rooster to waive my debt for this. Her eyes go wide.
You did?
Aye. He can't very well take it away from a guildmaster, can he? That wouldn't look right. I used his love of bureaucracy against him. Told him it's a far better show of his leadership to have strong, competent masters who are loyal and wield the artifacts that they teach about. That, and I'd put in a good word with the Taurians when it comes time to re-elect the head guildmaster. Aspeth grins up at me, but then her expression fades.
Have you seen Magpie since she left the courtroom?
She asks.
Was she very upset?
I don't know if she's avoiding a hard conversation with me or if there's simply too much to cover. But I'm surprised she asks about Magpie. After all, the woman tried to get her killed. I have not. Rooster dealt with her prior to today. For all her courtroom dramatics, she knew she was in danger of losing her position simply from the drinking, and how many classes she's had fail in the past few years. I pause. She actually told Rooster he needed to promote me, though. That if she was giving up her spot, it should be given to me.
She's right.
I sigh. It's just always complicated with Magpie. She does something unforgivable, and then turns around and tries to make it better. I can't look past that she tried to have you killed, though. I shake my head. She's destroyed any friendship we might have had. I pull Asbeth a little closer to me.
And the others? Gwenna, Lark, Kip, Meriden? Were they devastated at failing?
Her tone is careful, but I know just how much her five means to her. They're drinking away their sorrows, I tell her. They've joined the repeater ranks. It's not a bad thing, though. They'll get more guild experience, and after hearing what was found in the crypt, I think more teachers will be eager to pull them in. I wonder if the next part will hurt her feelings, but decide to say it anyway. I've let them know I would be happy to teach them again.
I'm glad. You're an excellent teacher, and they deserve the best.
I wait for her to say more, but Asbeth falls silent again. We make it to Magpie's nest. My nest now, I suppose. And pause in front of the door. The lights are out, and no one is inside except a big orange shape in the window. Asbeth makes a choked little sound of happiness at the sight of her cat, and I suddenly get tired of dancing around the topic I really want to ask about. What about you? She looks up at me, her eyes dark and glossy in the moonlight.
What do you mean?
I know what the king decided. What are you going to do now? The pain on her face is obvious, and I ache that she's had her dream torn away from her. If I could give it back to her, I would, and I hate how helpless it makes me feel to realize that no amount of work, no amount of sweat equity I put in, can bring back Asbeth's most cherished dream. I can't fix this for her, and it mucking kills me.
I don't know,
Asbeth confesses. There's a fragile expression on her face. She's completely lost.
I tried not to think beyond my goal, protecting the hold. That was my entire purpose. But now, there's a new heir and Liata's money, and I'm not needed or even wanted at Honori. The guild doesn't want me either. I don't know what to do with myself.
You could stay married to me. I feel like a fool blurting it out. She probably doesn't want anything to do with me now. Asbeth could do so much better than a nobody like me. She deserves wealth, stability, a home of her own. I have none of these things, my life tied to the guild. But I would love the fuck out of her every day. She looks up at me with an expression of pure surprise.
You still want me?
Everything that's been happening must have truly beat upon her self-esteem if she questions this. I thought I'd made it quite clear how I felt the 24 times I knotted her in the span of a few days, but perhaps she needs to be told again. Woman, I'm obsessed with you. I think I'd lose my mind if you left.
But it was supposed to be a marriage of convenience,
she tells me, stepping a bit closer.
So you could chaperone me?
It's still convenient for me. It would likely be convenient for me in 50 years, when I'm old and gray and my horns are pitted. It will be convenient for me until the end of time, Asbeth. Do you understand? I need you. I want you with me. And I know it might be hard for you to stay, but I would love if you tried. My voice grows suspiciously hoarse. Please. She gazes up at me, quiet. Then, with an undignified squeal, my aristocratic holder wife flings herself into my arms. She jumps, and I automatically wrap myself around her. even as her legs go around my waist.
I love you,
she tells me over and over, peppering my long nose with kisses.
I love you, Hawk. Are you sure?
More than sure. You belong with me. I hold her tightly in my arms, my heart light. You're my wife, my love, my everything. She slides her arms around my neck and kisses the side of my face.
Let's go inside. I want to be with you.
Five hells, I want that too. But I hesitate because I need to be certain. I just don't want you to have regrets, Aspeth. I know you can do better than me. She tugs lightly on my nose ring.
You hush. I wanted someone who loved me for me. Someone who doesn't care if I talk about old Prelian glyphs for hours. I don't care if you have no money.
She laughs, the sound bright.
I don't either. I'm not even the heir anymore. I'm free.
She says the word in a dazed voice, as if not quite believing it, and then laughs again.
I can do as I like.
She gives me a sly look.
I can do who I like.
So you can. I open the door to the dormitory and carry my wife in. The flags and banners still show Magpie's symbol, but that will all be changed over the next few days, along with the master's quarters. For now, I'm content to be in the room at the front of the dorm where I've always been. The moment I open the door, the big orange beast launches itself off the windowsill with a yowl.
Squeaker!
Aspeth cries with delight.
You're all right!
She slides out of my grip and runs to her beloved pet, scooping the fat cat into her arms and hugging it tight. She presses enthusiastic kisses to the cat's head just like she did to me and ignores the fur flying around her.
I was so worried about you.
Gwenna helped me, I say, feeling a little foolish. She made sure your cat was taken care of, and contrary to what it might look like, I did brush her. I wave a hand in the air, swatting at some of the orange fluff drifting past. It doesn't do any good. Aspeth chuckles.
I know. She's the wooliest cat ever, but that just makes her special.
She squeezes the cat again, and I feel like I'm interrupting their moment as she scratches the thing's head and purring fills the room. She slept with me every night, I grumble, watching as my wife sits on the bed with her cat, right on your pillow, and woke up with a mouthful of fur every morning.
That's how you know Squeaker approves of you,
Aspeth says happily, and presses another elated kiss atop the cat's head.
She likes you just as much as I do.
I know you love her, so I made sure she was safe. I wouldn't let anyone touch her. Aspeth bows her head down over the cat, and then she looks up at me. Tears streak down her face again, and I feel like an arse for making her cry.
I knew you wouldn't. You're the best of men.
I'm not a man. I'm a Taurian. She gives a watery giggle and sets the cat down on the bed.
Even better.
She crosses to my side, and her clothes are covered in drifting cat hair, but I don't care. She gazes up at me, her eyes full of emotion, and then slides a hand under the sash across my chest.
My Taurian.
Yours, I agree, since the moment I laid eyes upon you. And then I lean in and press my muzzle to her mouth. It's vaguely a kiss. Taurian mouths don't match up with human ones, and it feels awkward even as I try it. But I still want to try. I lift my head and gaze down at Aspeth. She looks wonderstruck, touching her mouth.
Did you just kiss me?
I must have done it wrong if you have to ask. She shakes her head.
It was wonderful.
I cup the back of her neck and tilt her face up to mine once more. My sweet Aspeth, I murmur, pressing a second kiss on the tip of her nose. It feels just as awkward as the first, but she makes a happy sigh, and so I continue, kissing her cheek and then her brow. My lovely, precious wife. Her expression grows dreamy, and her hands roam over my coat.
Shall I distract the cat with food from the kitchen so I can be alone with my husband?
I like that idea. Aspeth gives me a sweet smile and scoops her cat up again, burying her face against its neck as she carries it across the dormitory. I pull off my sash and coat, stripping off some of the many layers of full guild regalia. I'm most comfortable in just a shirt and breeches, but I suppose that will be changing now that I'm a guildmaster. Ah, well. She returns a while later, her arms empty and her clothes changed, her hair wet from a bath. Aspeth immediately crosses the room to me, a sly smile on her face.
I decided to wash up and borrowed one of the fledgling uniforms. Getting started without me?
Just taking a few things off. I pull her into my arms and rub my nose against the curve of her neck. It's half hidden by the high collar of her uniform, and I want to tear the damn thing from her body. How I've missed your scent.
I've missed you too. Everything about you.
Her hands roam over my shirt, as if she wants to touch me everywhere all at once.
Can I undress you?
I nod, and then she pulls my clothing off piece by piece until I stand before her in nothing but my skin. She makes a pleased sound, moving forward and pressing her mouth to my chest, even as her hand slides down to my cock. Aspeth curls her fingers around my length, teasing it, and then glances up at me.
No, not.
Not for another 5 years.
It'll be strange without it,
she confesses. I'll make it good for you. You won't be disappointed.
Never disappointed,
she says, voice achingly sweet, and strokes my cock again. Her fingers dance over the tip, and when a bead of pre-cum appears, she draws circles on my skin with it.
How far we've come in just 2 months, you and I.
Yes. Now you're no longer asking me why I'm dripping. She buries her face against my chest, her shoulders shaking with laughter.
Cruel of you to toss that in my face.
I thought it was charming. I think I fell in love with you in that moment.
Well, you had a funny way of showing it. I thought you hated me for the longest time.
Never. Just fighting my feelings. I'm not good with them. Aspeth smiles up at me, and she's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Taurian or human or fey or anything else. Nothing can compare to my wife's teasing smile. I want to crush her against me and hold her tight and never let her go. I still haven't yelled at you for your stunt in the tunnels.
Tomorrow,
she tells me, her hand tightening around my cock. She gives me a pump with her fist, one that makes my breath catch.
Tomorrow, we think about the rest of the world. Tonight, I just want it to be us.
I like that idea. 51. Hawk. I reach over and tug the shirt over her head and then untie the laces of her corset, grumbling at how many layers women wear. All the while, she pets and toys with my cock. It seems to take forever to get her undressed, but once her clothes are pooling at her feet, there's nothing but soft, dimpled flesh in front of my eyes, and I want to feast on her forever. I cup one heavy breast, pleased that it's large enough to fill my hand. Her nipple puckers and I stroke it even as I rub my muzzle against her face and neck. Her hand continues to tease my cock, but it doesn't take long for me to get as hard as a rock. I know from my hazy memories of our time in the crypt that Aspeth is responsive, but she needs to be petted a bit first. So I haul her over to the bed, set her down on the mattress, and lie down next to her. I use one hand to play with her gorgeous breasts while I finger her cunt until she's slick with arousal. She makes these sweet, gaspy noises when I touch her that set my body on fire with need, and I stand up to move between her parted thighs, murmuring encouragement as I fit my cock to her entrance.
She's hot and wet and clutches at my cock like a glove. And when I rock over her, she moans and wraps her legs around my waist.
I like the knot.
She pants between my thrusts, her tits bouncing as I fuck her.
But this is nicer.
Her hand strays down my arm and she digs her nails into my muscles, her back arching.
Oh, gods, you feel huge even now.
Such flattery. I make love to my wife, my strokes leisurely and deep as I claim her. And when Aspeth comes, she quakes around my cock and holds tightly to me, her orgasm a thing of beauty as she falls apart in my arms. Then it's my turn, and I slide my thumb over her clit, making sure she feels every stroke as I pound into her. Her cunt clenches around me a second time as I come, and then stars dance before my eyes, my hooves slamming on the wood floor as I grind deep inside her, shooting my release. Aspeth runs her fingers over my pectorals while I come back to myself.
We never had birth control in the crypt, or now.
It's something I thought about days after, while Aspeth sat in prison and waited for the king to arrive in Vast Warren. I reach for the table next to the bed and pull out the drawer, producing a bead on a leather thong. You can wear this. She sits up, or tries to, except I've got her pinned, her hips locked to mine.
Is that a Prelian pause bead?
Aye, you've seen them.
Heard of them? The books were very reticent to discuss anything that affected female anatomy. How does it work?
As long as you wear this, even if you're pregnant now, nothing in your womb will advance in time until you take it off. We'll handle the whole children thing when you're ready. Aspeth pauses.
What if I'm never ready?
Then you can wear that to your grave. I nuzzle another kiss against her jaw. I just want you to be happy, Aspeth. I've never demanded children from you. Never would.
I know. I'm not ready yet. I think I would like children, but not now. Not with everything so uncertain.
She slips the bead over her head.
Maybe in a year?
Whatever you decide, I say, and I mean it. There's an urgent knock at the front door. We both groan. Aspeth skitters out from under me, grabbing a robe and wrapping it around her body.
Are you expecting someone?
I shake my head. Perhaps one of the others forgot something? They've been moved into the repeater barracks. Her expression clouds, and I know she's thinking of them and the trouble she's caused. I squeeze her hand, because it wasn't as if she forced anyone to do anything. They are her friends and chose to help her. They have a chance to enter the guild again next season. Don't blame yourself.
I can't help it.
The knock at the door occurs again, louder and more insistent, and I growl in frustration. If it's Magpie, I'm going to march her to the nearest jail. I shove pants on while Aspeth cleans up, and I head out to the main entrance, my hooves stomping and expressing my irritation loudly to all. When Aspeth appears in the doorway to the bedroom with the robe tight around her body, I move to the front door and fling it open. A guild scholar is there, his hand raised as if he means to knock a third time. He shrinks back at the sight of an angry Taurian looming in the doorway, uncertainty on his face. He holds a box in his arms and clutches it tightly even as he steps back.
I was told Lady Aspeth was here.
My wife is tired. Guild business can wait. It can wait forever, as far as I'm concerned. They've made her miserable enough. Come back tomorrow, or next week, or next month. Aspeth pushes past me, squinting. Then a look of surprise crosses her face at our visitor.
Archivist Kestrel? Is something wrong?
He brightens at the sight of Aspeth.
Lady, pleased to meet you again. Nothing is wrong. Well, not yet. There is a matter of some urgency, and I thought to ask you something. You can read Prelian, yes?
She glances up at me and then gives a tiny nod.
Old better than new, of course. New Prelian is region-dependent, and we don't have great examples of some of the more far-flung regions.
Aspeth trails off as he opens the box in front of her, revealing it like he would some sort of offering.
Oh, a sistral?
The archivist nods eagerly. You know of them? Aspeth pulls the thing carefully out of the box.
Just that they were musical instruments. So few of them have been found intact, and I'm told the only two enchanted ones are in Lord Bessrall's care.
She holds it reverently, squinting in the flickering light, and then makes a frustrated sound.
Come inside.
The little man hurries inside, carefully giving me as much space as he can. If I wasn't in the process of going to bed with my wife, I'd be amused. As it is, I'm cranky and feeling protective. Aspeth has had a long day, I warn him. This had better be quick.
This is an instrument scheduled to ship out to Lord Bessrall tomorrow, actually,
Archivist Kestrel says, trotting after Aspeth as she strides toward the Nest's communications desk.
That's why I'm here tonight. I need a second opinion on the inscription, and my colleagues and I cannot agree. I know Lady Aspeth is supposed to be an expert with reading glyphs, and so here I am.
I grunt, still annoyed. Aspeth's no longer part of the guild. They made that quite clear. If he harasses her even a little, he's going to find my hoof in his arse. But my wife digs around in a drawer, looking for a magnifying glass and carefully holding what looks like a hand-sized harp on a stick, the sistral, in her other hand. After she finds the glass, she makes another frustrated noise at the shadows.
It's too dark in here.
Sighing, I pull an unlit candle from its wall sconce and bring it to the desk, then light it and set it in a holder. Better?
Yes, thank you, love.
She peers down at the sistral with the magnifying glass, and I try not to preen at being called love in front of another. Ridiculous. I'm not some green lad in love for the first time, and yet my ears twitch and I catch myself beaming at my wife as she works. Because she's mine.
Oh dear,
she says after a moment.
What? What is it?
The archivist asks. Aspeth straightens and turns to him, biting her lip.
I'm sorry. Did you say that you're shipping this out to Lord Bessrall in the morning?
When he nods, she winces.
I'm sorry to tell you, but I believe this is a fake.
A fake?
He sputters, though the sound isn't at all convincing and my hackles go up.
What do you mean?
Do you see this glyph?
She pulls the magnifying glass out and holds it over the sistral's handle, pointing to a tiny triangular shape with her pinky finger.
It's the correct glyph, but the proper usage would have it after the descriptor, not before.
She trails off as Archivist Kestrel begins to chuckle, clasping his hands in delight. Her gaze flicks to me.
It's a fake, Kestrel hoots with delight. You are quite correct.
You seem rather excited about that,
Aspeth says, expression careful.
Lord Bessrall.
Kestrel waves a hand in the air.
It's not being shipped out. I was lying. I just wanted to test you one last time before I was certain.
He looks absolutely thrilled.
It is indeed a fake, and I should know. I created it for training purposes.
Aspeth's gaze slides to me again.
I don't understand. Why bring it here now? It's almost midnight.
I shrug because I'm puzzled as well.
Because I have to offer first.
The archivist reaches for Aspeth, and when I growl low, recoils again. He clasps his hand in front of him once more.
I want you to join us. We are not part of the guild officially, but we are employed by them. We take each uncovered artifact and record it and its purpose, and we study the ones that are mysteries. We look for ways to fix the broken ones and work with the Lord Holders when they wish to acquire a magical artifact. We write treatises upon the artifacts in our care and train the guild's fledglings on how to properly spot a fake. I cannot think of anyone who would be better for archiving than you, Lady Aspeth.
Aspeth's eyes grow wide as he speaks. She looks at me again, excitement on her face, and then back at the archivist.
But I've been forbidden. The guild.
You have been forbidden to join the guild, yes? No one said anything about the archivists. We are the ones who find ourselves not quite right for guild work, the ones who would rather study all day long instead of climbing through tunnels. We work in the guild hall and in the libraries, doing record keeping instead of excavating. As for the guild, Rooster himself recommended I come here this evening to speak my piece before others arrive.
Rooster did? I shouldn't be surprised. Even though he's overfond of politics, he always looks out for the guild, and the archivist is right. Aspeth would be an amazing archivist.
It sounds like a dream.
Aspeth breathes, and then pauses.
Wait, you said others are going to arrive. What others?
Archivist Kestrel shakes his hands in the air with excitement.
Why, all the others, dear lady. Ever since that day in the artifact training room, word of your skills and knowledge has spread around Vast Warren. Every black market merchant is going to be looking for ways to pay you to assist them, and every forger is going to want you. That's why I had to come here in the middle of the night. I had to get here before you agree to work for any of them. I would love to work alongside you, lady. I truly mean that.
Her lips part, and Aspeth's soft expression is gorgeous to see. It makes me ache because now I want this for her.
I would stay here with Hawk, yes? I'm not going to leave my husband's side.
Of course. It's a short walk from here to the archives. You will sleep in his bed every night, unlike a guild explorer.
Then he colors red, as if he realizes what he's just said.
I mean...
She knows what you mean, I say dryly. Well, Aspeth? Her eyes wide, she nods.
Yes, of course. I would love to.
Splendid!
The archivist races forward and hugs Aspeth, then skitters away again.
I'm sorry. That wasn't well done of me. I'm just excited. You should see the things we have in the archives that are waiting to be deciphered and recorded. There are so many who can't read old Prelian quite as well as me, and I don't trust their interpretations. And I could truly use another set of hands, and...
He gives a full-body shiver.
This is so very exciting!
He bounces toward the door, then pauses and scrambles back toward the desk.
Could I retrieve the sistril? It's the best fake I have.
Oh, of course.
She helps him box it back up. When he clutches the box again, he beams at her once more.
I will return in the morning with the official guild contracts. You won't accept anyone else, will you? I'll insist that your salary be the equivalent of any man's.
I won't disappoint you.
She promises him.
Then I will return at dawn.
With that, the excitable archivist races back out into the night, leaving me amused and Aspeth dazed. Congratulations, little bird, I say to my wife. It's not quite guild work, but...
It's better,
she blurts out, pressing her hands to her mouth.
Oh, I don't mean that. It's just... I think I'm vastly more suited for studying and analyzing than sleeping in tunnels and prying rings off the dead. I've felt so very guilty about everything in the crypt, Hawk. I don't think I could do it, even if I wanted to.
Well, now it's decided. You'll work in the archives by day and come home to my bed every night, I tease. She lets out another girlish squeal and then flings herself into my arms again.
Oh, Hawk, this is wonderful. I shall need new spectacles, 2 pairs at least, and more books, and...
Her giddy delight fills me with joy. And save it for the morning, sweetheart. There's time enough. For now, you need to relax. It's been a long day.
The longest.
She agrees, sagging against me. Then she pauses.
Do you suppose his name really is Kestrel? Is he like Lark and named after a bird?
I snort. No, the archivists take bird names as well. I lift her chin and kiss her on the mouth, and I think I'm getting better at this with practice. You can be Sparrow after all.
You're Sparrow?
She cries triumphantly. Then she pauses.
Don't hawks hunt sparrows?
They devour them. Heat flares in her gaze.
Sounds lovely.
It does, doesn't it? And I lock the door behind me, then carry my wife back to our quarters. The future will have a lot of changes. There's an archivist to be inducted into her work, and a guildmaster who's going to need fledglings. There are repeaters, Gwenna, Kip, and the others, to get settled. There's a Taurian ring ceremony that needs to happen. But all of that can wait until the morning. Tonight, and every night thereafter, Sparrow is mine.
This is Felicity Monroe. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Bull Moon Rising by Ruby Dixon. This program was directed by Gabra Zuckerman. Executive producer Iris McElroy. Associate producer Kirby Crosby. Edited by Booktrack. Text copyright 2024 by Ruby Dixon. Production copyright 2024 Penguin Random House LLC. All rights reserved.